technology with the CDC's Mycotic Disease Branch. The Mycotic Diseases Branch works to prevent fungal diseases from domestic and international, including healthcare-associated infections and environmental fungal diseases like coccidioidomycosis. Caitlin's presentation is about enhanced surveillance for coccidioidomycosis, in states where it is not highly endemic.
Good morning. So I just wanted to start off by thanking all of the co-authors for all of their hard work and also to acknowledge contributions of many other people at state and local health departments and at CDC who aren't listed here. And then a little background about coccidioidomycosis, or COCSI for short. It is a fungal infection that's also commonly called valley fever. It's caused by inhalation of the fungus coccidioides from the environment. And about 60% of infections are totally asymptomatic, but the other 40% of people develop symptoms like fatigue, cough, and fever that can last for weeks to months. And a small percent of infections can disseminate to other body parts, including the central nervous system. From studies of patients in Arizona and California, we know that it can be a really serious and costly illness, especially because the symptoms can be similar to those of so many other diseases. Diagnosis and treatment can be delayed, and an estimated 60 to 80% of people with COCSI pneumonia actually get unnecessary antibiotics before being correctly diagnosed. Enhanced surveillance in Arizona found that about 75% of patients miss work or school for a median of 2 weeks, and as many as 40% of patients are hospitalized with an average hospitalization cost of approximately $50,000. COCSI is usually diagnosed using serology to detect IgM and IgG antibodies. Enzyme immunoassay is very sensitive, and immunodiffusion and complement fixation are more specific and often used for confirmation. Culture, histopathology, and molecular methods like PCR are a little bit less commonly used, and positive culture can be indicative of more severe infection. So just to orient you to where COCSI is common, this is a map showing the approximate areas where COCSI lives. And it's mostly based on large-scale skin test studies from the 1940s and 50s, plus the locations of a few outbreaks and cases outside of those areas. And we think that the true endemic areas are probably broader than the shaded areas that are shown here. But we do know that the most highly endemic areas are southern Arizona and California's Central Valley. COCSI is a reportable disease in 22 states, and it's nationally notifiable. So this is data from the National Notifiable Diseases Surveillance System, or NNDSS. And you can see that more than 65% of the cases are from Arizona in orange, and about 30% are from California. And then there are relatively smaller numbers of cases reported from all other states, just the very tip of the bars there in blue. But these cases have been increasing over time, kind of along with the overall trend, which you can see peaked in 2011 and then started to come back down, but has actually started coming back up again in 2015 and 2016. So COCSI really is a public health problem on a national level, but until now we didn't really know a whole lot about the epidemiology of cases reported from states other than Arizona and California, because we only have really kind of basic core data that comes through NNDSS. So the objectives of this project were mostly just to describe the features of reported COCSI cases in states where it's considered to be low endemic and in states where it's not endemic. And a secondary objective was to understand how the CST case definition, which requires both clinical and lab criteria, how well the definition works in these areas. So we hope that a better understanding of these cases will help us to work towards kind of the larger goals of improving routine COCSI surveillance and helping to guide future public health and healthcare provider education and awareness efforts in these areas. So these are the 14 states who participated in the project. The low endemic states are Nevada, New Mexico, and Utah in yellow, and all of the other states are non-endemic in purple. COCSI cases were identified through routine surveillance in 2016. A state or local health department personnel contacted patients for a voluntary phone interview using a standardized questionnaire, and they asked about things like symptoms, healthcare-seeking behaviors, treatment, impact on daily activities, and travel history. And then a separate one-page form was used to collect information from state surveillance databases about lab tests. And the completed forms were sent to CDC for analysis. Some patients met the case definition, but they weren't believed to have COXI, or they clearly had a different illness like histoplasmosis, and so most of those patients were not contacted for an interview in order just to avoid confusion. We identified 339 patients who met the COXI case definition in 2016. 107 of them were residents of low endemic states, and 232 were in non-endemic states. And of those 339 patients, 144, or 42%, were not interviewed. And the most common reasons that the patient wasn't interviewed was that they weren't able to be contacted or because they weren't considered a COXI case, either because they had a different illness identified, usually histoplasmosis, or their illness just wasn't thought to be clinically consistent with COXI. 13% of patients had died, and 10% refused. So we ended up with 195 interviewed patients, and these people are shown here on the map. We did exclude 9 cases from further analysis because they most likely didn't have COXI based on lab results and lack of exposure to endemic areas. So total, out of both the non-interviewed and the interviewed patients, 16% likely didn't have COXI, and all but one of those patients were from non-endemic states. And these are the demographics among the remaining 186 interviewed patients who I'll focus on for the rest of the talk. The median age was 65, 59% male, 11% Hispanic or Latino, and 89% white. Diabetes and heart disease were the most commonly reported underlying conditions. 19% were considered to be immunosuppressed due to HIV transplant or immunosuppressive medications. And 34% of patients reported no underlying conditions. And then 7% of people actually said that they'd had COXI in the past. 91% of patients reported having symptoms. The most common symptom was cough, followed by fatigue and shortness of breath. Less than half of patients reported valley fever, which is interesting since the disease is also called valley fever. The median symptom duration was 60 days among all patients, 38.5 days among those who had recovered at the time of the interview, and 90 days among patients who were still having symptoms at the time of the interview. Patients first sought medical care a median of 5.5 days after symptom onset. Most patients either first sought care in the emergency department or at a primary care doctor's office. 63% of patients first sought care in an endemic area, and more specifically, 28% first sought care in Arizona. More than half of patients saw a doctor more than twice before being tested for COXI. 18% of patients said that they asked their doctor for a COXI test. 70% were diagnosed with something else before being tested for COXI, and of those, 83% were prescribed antibiotics. And patients were diagnosed with COXI a median of 38 days after first seeking health care. 30% of patients said that they were first tested for COXI by their primary care doctor, and almost half of patients were first tested by either a pulmonologist or an infectious disease doctor. 37% of patients had a positive enzyme immunoassay test, 29% had a positive immunodiffusion, and 35% had a positive complement fixation test, and 29% had a positive culture. 43% of patients were hospitalized for a median of 8 days. 83% of patients reported that the lungs were the only site of infection, and 17% said that another body part was affected. 68% of patients were prescribed antifungals, and of those, 82% were prescribed fluconazole, which is a common treatment. The rest were prescribed itraconazole, voriconazole, or amphotericin B. And in terms of effects on activities, of the 31% of patients who had a job or were in school when they got sick, 77% missed work or school for a median of 19 days, and 71% said that COXI interfered with their daily activities for a median of 40 days. 79% of patients knew about their positive COXI test results before the interview, and about half of patients said that they had heard of COXI before being diagnosed with it. And of those, most people said that they first heard about it from a family member, friend, or coworker. And the rest of people said that they heard about it from another source, like the internet, TV, or radio. So overall, 68% of patients said that they traveled out of their home state in the 4 months before developing COXIE. And this map shows you, again, the participating states in dark gray. And the number of patients by state of residence is shown with the light orange boxes. And the number of trips by state or country is shown with the dark orange circles. And the thickness of the lines corresponds to the frequency of the travel pattern to endemic areas. So you can see that some of the most frequent travel patterns were from Minnesota, Michigan, and Wisconsin to Arizona. And then you can't see it on this map, but 48% of the patients from non-endemic states were snowbirds who resided part of the year in Arizona. And we also compared features of patients in low and non-endemic states. So patients in low endemic states were more likely to be Hispanic or Latino, younger than 65, or have a yearly household income of less than $50,000. Whereas patients in non-endemic states were more likely to have heart disease, to know about their COXIE test results before the interview, and to know about COXIE just in general before being diagnosed with it. Patients in low endemic states were more likely to have chest pain, headache, joint pain, or muscle pain than patients in non-endemic states. But there were no differences between the two groups with the other more common symptoms like cough, fatigue, or fever. Patients in non-endemic states were more likely to ask their doctor for a COXIE test and to have a chest x-ray, but they were less likely to have a positive enzyme immunoassay test and more likely to have positive immunodiffusion or culture. And they were more likely to be prescribed antifungals than patients in low endemic states. So in conclusion, COXIE causes substantial morbidity among residents of low and non-endemic states, similar to Arizona and California, with over 40% of patients hospitalized and with many patients having their daily activities affected for nearly 6 weeks. We found some slight differences between low and non-endemic states in terms of patient population and testing patterns, but no apparent differences in severity of disease or effects on patients. One important way that our findings are different from previous studies is the high proportion of patients who were diagnosed by culture, nearly 30%, compared with about 5 to 10% in Arizona surveillance, which suggests that less severe cases likely go undiagnosed or unreported. We also found that delays in diagnosis and unnecessary antibiotic use were common, indicating that improved healthcare provider and public awareness outside the highly endemic areas is needed. Our findings could also support some slight modifications to the CSTE case definition. So interpreting positive COXIE serologic test results can be challenging, especially in non-endemic areas, because the test can cross-react with other diseases. We found that at least 16% of patients didn't actually have COXIE, and some states are already excluding these patients from their official case counts, but it might be good to have that guidance explicitly stated in the case definition. And in a similar way, most states are already excluding people who have previously had COXIE, which makes sense because we think that people can only get COXIE once. But the case definition doesn't actually specify how to count those people. And 7% of our patients said that they had a history of COXIE, but we didn't specifically try to find out if they'd been previously reported to public health or not. And then lastly, it's not really clear if asymptomatic cases meet the case definition because of the way that it's worded. So we found about 9% asymptomatic, which is higher than in Arizona. When they did a similar project, they found about 5% asymptomatic. And so as a result, Arizona only uses the lab component of the case definition just because they have such large numbers of cases. So overall, I think the contribution of these three things to national COXIE case counts is probably pretty small, but they're still important areas for future improvements to COXIE surveillance.
So interesting presentation. I'm glad I live in New York where we don't have this. It's maybe just a matter of terminology, but I found it interesting that you called states non-endemic and low-endemic. What would be a high-endemic state, and what's the threshold, and why did you choose that terminology? Just out of curiosity.
Yeah, thanks. That's a good question. It mostly was just trying to be as simple as possible, but you're absolutely right. Even the term endemic, I think, is kind of loaded with confusion, especially for diseases like this, which I would say almost can even be transiently endemic in some areas. We don't know. In terms of like a high endemic state, you know, based on the map that I showed of the skin testing results from those old studies, we know that probably the most highly endemic areas are southern Arizona, California, Central Valley. So I would call those high endemic areas, but it's really, really subjective.
Hi. I was just curious whether any of your, you said 68% of the people had traveled to high endemic areas, so that'd be chalked up to that's probably where they got it.
Yeah.
Did you find any convincing evidence that there was a hotbed of cocci somewhere that you didn't expect it? Like there were some really convincing cases that hadn't traveled?
Not particularly, although it's a good point about trying to figure out like where people got it. It's kind of tricky since a lot of people actually traveled more than one place. You know, a lot of the snowbirds, they go to Arizona, but then they take a road trip all around the Southwest. We did find 24 patients from non-endemic states who reported no travel to endemic areas in the 4 months before developing cocci, but they did say that they had ever traveled. Some of them did say that they'd ever traveled to endemic areas in their lifetime, so that probably explains it. Some of those people maybe had like older infections.
Thank you, and that was really interesting. I was just curious, for the 16% who ended up, you saying, not have cocci or unlikely they
yeah.
have cocci, in terms of their lab results, were those mostly positive EIAs, or did you also see positive immune diffusion in complex?
That's a good question. I feel like a lot of them, I mean, it was mostly serology. I don't think there was anybody who had, like, positive culture histopath. I think most of them were probably EIAs. There may have been actually a couple of immunodiffusion and complementation also.
We get to break a little early for lunch, so thank you for attending this session. Enjoy your lunch break and the rest of the conference.